On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Anne-Marie O'Dwyer, chatting all things the psychiatry of cancer.
I want to say that it's very common to be very distressed, to have a very prominent psychological response to cancer, that they are not alone, that lots of other people feel in that way, and that it's important for them to have information. Information is power, but it has to be the right information.
As ever, we're available on all podcast platforms.
Seachtain, an Indo Ascaliga.
Time I mon iroctí a yen of chacht ar a chorp, agus súligam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, turmi.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara i gcúrna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an tálam a gináam gribh orcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tórin gribh an orcháir stán i lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin eachar. Ná ní bhin áon dár dárach sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
As far as I can see, I always want to get in the Irish team. And that should be every young player's dream and ambition in this country. And if you're playing in a place where you're not going to get the opportunities in the big games, that they're the ones that get you picked. They are the ones, the Champions Cup games are the ones that get you picked. You need to be playing in a team and starting in a team for those games. It's as simple as that if you want to play in the Irish team.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just a warning that today's podcast contains details of murder, rape and sexual assault that some listeners may find upsetting. For 3.5 decades, French authorities hunted for a brutal serial killer nicknamed Le Graal.
That photo fit became known everywhere as the pockmarked man.
Little did they know, the man who terrorised women and children while continually escaping justice was actually one of their own.
He joined the police force, quickly moved up the ranks to the elite Garde Républicaine, which is the one that all French people look up to that.
In 2021, the horrible truth about François Varouve finally came to light. But how did he cover his tracks for so long? And why did an elusive killer, keenly aware of his own public notoriety, decide to appear on a TV game show? I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Paris-based freelance journalist Catherine Field to look at the French serial killer who hid as a family man. Catherine, we'll get to his unusual television connection in a few minutes. But first, can you introduce us to the man by the name of François Varouve?
He was a typical sort of guy from the north of France. He was born up near Lille, a bit of a chaotic childhood. His mother died when he was very young. He then claimed that his father abused him. And then it seemed as though he got his life back together, met the woman that was to become his wife, and moved to the Paris region, where he joined the police force, quickly moved up the ranks to the elite Garde Républicaine, which is the one that all French people look up to that. And then it seemed up until the time in 2011 when he had a motorbike accident and never really returned to the police force after that, it seemed that he was, if you like, living the dream.
He had, I suppose, a bit of an unusual career within the police force. It wasn't all smooth sailing, was it?
No, it wasn't at all. He originally joined the cavalry regiment with the Garde Républicaine. I mean, anyone who's watched the 14th of July military parades in the centre of Paris has seen the horses of the Garde Républicaine come down the Champs-Élysées. It is incredibly elite. It is the thing that you would have your granny or your aunt tell everyone every day that their relative was in the Garde Républicaine. But it was actually already in those early days that his superiors were saying, hey, watch out for this guy. He's really got two faces. One face, they say he was very kind, very generous, very affable, the sort of guy that you would slap on the back, sit down, perhaps you have a drink, share some time with on a Friday evening. Other colleagues were saying, well, no, he was a very angry person. He would lose his temper very quickly. He was prone to depression. There were allegations that he only joined the police union because he needed cover for a lot of the time. He took off work for depression or for various illnesses. He had this mixed career, but this was also at a time when the police were trying to keep their numbers up, and it was very difficult for them to keep officers in those jobs.
One of his jobs was at one stage was to patrol a public park in Paris that was notorious for prostitutes. And I think some of his colleagues raised questions about what was being described as his own morality.
Yes, indeed. He was on this, still to this day, you have mounted police on patrol in the Bois de Boulogne. That's the park to the west of Paris. Very famous for prostitution that goes on there. Now, you know, some of his colleagues did say that the way he viewed the cases there did seem a little strange. But then on the other side, he seemed to have been a policeman or a gendarme who covered his tracks. He knew, according to his colleagues at least, how far to go. He knew not to put any of this in writing. And it was always just sort of innuendo, suspicions, rather than anything actually that he did that other colleagues noticed.
Now, we're having this conversation, Catherine, with the benefit of hindsight. So we've teed him up as kind of a two-faced character. But in reality, I don't think anybody thought there was a whole lot going on there more than, oh, he has a bit of weird few quirks. There's no sense of the story you're about to tell us about his crimes, and they are pretty shocking, some of them. Tell us the first one we know about, which I think dates from the mid-1980s.
Yes, the first one we know about is, as you say, it's horrific. 11-year-old girl, Cécile, in Paris, was 1986. He trapped her as she was leaving home to go to school. She was subjected to rape. She was strangled. She was stabbed. Her body was found in the third lower basement of the building in which she lived. The parents had an absolutely horrific time. It was quite usual for the daughter, Cécile, to walk to school. She'd leave for school after her brother had left and she'd just toodle off to school. She'd come back from school at lunchtime and her mother would phone up and say, is everything going okay? She phoned home. Cécile didn't pick up the phone. Mother then discovered that she hadn't been to school. She hadn't arrived. None of the neighbours had seen her along the route. And it was then that the alarm went out and they found her body in that lower basement, just covered up by a piece of old carpet. Another really horrific twist to that, of course, is also that Cécile's half-brother actually saw the killer in the lift that morning and noticed him, noticed the acne face that he had, and said that the guy was just acting weird. These are the days before DNA and the days before the computers. So we're talking about all this with the benefit of how we deal with crimes, how police deal with crimes. None of that was there. And even throughout this whole horrific story, you have to remember that this was a police force that still dealt with bits of paper, that had policemen typing up reports and photocopying them and sending them off by post. So a lot of these details just went into a file in another police station somewhere else and weren't really picked up.
And of course, the only real thing they did have to go on at that stage was the brother's description of that interaction where the man he thought was the suspect told him to have a very, very good day, which he thought was kind of overly effusive for someone he'd never met before. And that did lead to that picture ID, or the photo fit, I suppose we'd call it now, that was issued. And that led to a nickname which stuck.
Yes, and that photo fit became known everywhere as the pockmarked man or the acne-faced man. And this is, again, something, Kevin, that this photo fit went up in every police station in the greater Paris region. It was there. Everyone saw it. And that was at the same time when he was coming in, going out, and was being feted as this great member of the French police force.
We think it's a year before he strikes again.
We do. Police think that it was in March 1987 when he committed a murder, also in Paris, but this time it was in the centre of Paris in the Marais district. Again, absolutely shocking details. 38-year-old technician and a much younger German girl. I'm sorry to have to tell you this. They'd had their throats cut. There were cigarette burns on their bodies. They were choke laced. They were tied up. Really horrific. Again, police had all the details there. All the evidence was in that building. They found it.
And it goes on. Give us a sense over the years, Catherine, of what else he is believed to have done.
It's believed that in 1994, he raped a 7-year-old girl. Also in 1994, raped, abducted a 19-year-old girl. October 1987, assaulted and raped a 14-year-old girl who was returning from school. So essentially, we have got 4 murders, 6 rapes, and that's the ones that they're pretty sure of.
And then he disappears. The murders, the attacks, they all seem to stop.
They all seem to stop. He, of course, had that accident. It was in 2011, and that was when he left the police force, moved to the south of France, completely changed his life, even became a local councillor, and it just seemed to stop. Now, the question police are asking is, did it stop, or was it just that he had changed his way of operating? They're still going through all the other cold cases that they have on their books to see just, is there anything else that they missed? And one of the things that he did all the time that seemed odd was that every time he abducted a girl, and they were usually young girls walking home from school or cycling, he would show them a gendarme's card. He would show him his service ID. And it seemed odd that this was still going on. And it was thought for a while, well, maybe it's a fake ID. So, yeah, it was odd that there was this gap, but there is still the possibility that it wasn't a gap.
So he moves to the south of France with his wife and his children. And for all intents and purposes, whatever people in Paris might have thought about his personality, when he got down to the south of France, people seemed to like him. He seemed to be a good neighbour. He seemed to be an affable guy.
He did. His wife has said that he gave the impression, nothing to hide. He'd made a lifestyle change. He decided the police, the gendarme wasn't for him. Moved to the south of France. This was the sort of guy that you want to be. You kicked back a bit, did a lot of work in the community, and was sort of finally finding his feet on the Mediterranean coast.
And he certainly wasn't hiding, which probably nicely brings us on to his TV appearance.
Indeed. In 2019, he appeared on a very famous French television program called Everyone Wants to Take His Place. And he came on. He was, this is him. Look at him. He's a former policeman, former garde républicain, he's a cavalry officer, then moved to the motorized police force. Was even joking with the compere about what it was like being a policeman on horse duty in the Bois de Boulogne. I mean, he just came across as though he had a lot of information about the police, was happy to share it. And looking back on that video from 2019, you would think, gosh, wow, yeah, he's the sort of guy you want on your police force because he seemed so reassuring.
À la garde républicaine au régiment de cavalerie.
Wow. Et alors là, est-ce qu'on est plus souvent en train de défiler que c'est plus de la représentation ou vraiment il y a... j'ai rarement été contrôlé en voiture par un cheval. Donc,
Parce que vous ne circulez pas dans le bois de Boulogne, dans le bois de Vincennes. On assure...
Merci de sauver ma réputation. La question suivante. Quel animateur avez-vous contrôlé?
I've watched the video several times, Catherine, because I watched it once And then I felt the urge to watch it again and again because you're looking at a serial killer, but you could actually be looking at your neighbour, your friend, you know, your parents almost. He was so normal.
He did. He actually went through that whole process of being auditioned for this role several times. He was interviewed by various people and they all came to the conclusion that, wow, this is the sort of guy we want on our TV program that the viewer is going to be comfortable with, the presenter is going to be comfortable with, and the other people on the panel are going to be comfortable with.
A bit of an everyman in some way. Now, he didn't get on great in the quiz, to be fair, Catherine, did he?
No, he didn't. He was out on the first round. He was asked two questions. One was what sport was going to be included for the first time in the Olympics, for the Paris 2024 Olympics. He said it would be squash. And of course, that's wrong. It will be breakdance. And he was
I didn't know that either, to be fair.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, Kevin, but if you live in France, you are meant to know absolutely everything about the Paris Olympics. There's nothing is meant to be missing in your whole brain about the Paris Olympics. The other one was a question about the tuberculosis vaccination, and he got that wrong. So he went off with 0 points and left the stage, and no one heard any more about him.
So he crashed out of the game show, but it was 2 years after that that his luck, if you like, would finally run out because the cold case team back in Paris are working on the cases. What happens?
So this was really came about because a lawyer for the families of the victims just would not let this case rest, was determined that to do right by Cecile, to do right by Cecile's parents and all the other parents, all the other families that were affected by this, they were pushing and pushing and pushing. And eventually they managed to get the Justice Department and the Police Department to give new impetus to this case and to hand it over to a new investigating magistrate. Now, of course, by then, they'd got all the paperwork together, they'd got the DNA together, so they knew through the DNA of the cigarette butts and some of the other personal items that they found at Cecile's house, they knew they were dealing with the same killer. So they actually then matched that up with the evidence that was given to them. And the investigating magistrate ordered a DNA test on all 750 gendarmes who were serving in the greater Paris region at that time. And it was then that François Ferrov probably thought, this is it. Now that that letter, we've all seen that letter that came in 2021 from the magistrate, that was when, okay, the walls are closing in now.
So it's September 24th, 2021. He gets told that he has to give the DNA sample 5 days' time, but 3 days later, his wife reports him missing.
She does. She found this quite extraordinary. This was so out of character with him. And then, of course, he was then found 3 days after that summons arrived by his wife. He had killed himself in that rented apartment in that small fishing village on the Mediterranean. He'd taken an overdose of drugs, barbiturates, and also alcohol. But interestingly enough, that is where we find out more about this man, because he left a suicide note. And that suicide note explained why he carried out all these crimes.
Well, tell us what was in it, Catherine.
He said, and I'm quoting here, that there were times when I couldn't stand it and I had to destroy Sully, kill someone innocent. There was a mad rage, he said, that made him a criminal. He said that after a certain time, these impulses had seemed to be under control, but then he didn't really know where they came from. He admitted murders. He didn't give details of victims or circumstances, but he said that he had committed no crimes after 1997. And police took that DNA sample from his body and found the genetic profile that had been found at several of the crime scenes.
Do we think that his wife was oblivious in all of this? He seemed to suggest in that note that the marriage and the birth of his two children, that that was the turning point for him. And as a result, he had stepped back from, I suppose, his double life to become the family man. But nobody had a clue within his own family that this had ever happened.
No one had a clue. His two children say they knew nothing. His wife didn't seem to know very much. And in fact, it was, you know, this television show he was on in 2019. His wife really minimalized. I mean, that's what held up the investigation for so long, because she couldn't even remember what year it was. She thought it was 2020, could have been 2021. They seem to just be living this very innocent life down in the south of France. And they say they had no idea.
So in the end, Catherine, how many murders, how many rapes have been attached to his name? And I suppose, what's the outcome for the French authorities here? Because it must have been embarrassing. It's one of their own, and it took so long to catch him.
That's a big thing, that it was one of their own. When you look at the photo fit and you look at the picture of him on that television show, you can clearly see it's him. Yes, this was an identikit photo that was up in every police force. He was walking in and out of the police headquarters all the time. That is a big problem for them. It's not unusual for the police to just overlook someone who's one of their own. A lot of questions about that, particularly. Four murders, six rapes, possibly more. This is a real stain, not just on the police, but also on that department in the Justice Department that investigates all these murders. And the fact that it took so long, and it was really only, 2021 for an initial murder that was 1986. This is, they're saying, just too long, and it's time the police got their act together. But as I was saying, 1986, this is pre-DNA, pre-computers. Nevertheless, some of the families have said, yes, they're pleased, they now know. But it still doesn't take away the fact that there were so many similar crimes. Young girls on their way to school, on their way back from school, riding their bikes, who were approached by this man.
My thanks to Catherine Field. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode of The Indo Daily was produced by Garrett Mulhall, researched by Dave Hanratty and Leah Zaharoni, with sound by Rory Bowens. Archived clips were from France 2 and France 5. If you have been affected by any of the issues discussed in today's podcast, you can find a full list of helplines on the Irish Independent website. And if you enjoyed The Indo Daily, don't forget to follow the podcast and leave us a review.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.